Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio. It is Monday, August 4th. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined by Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how are you?
In the mighty words of Eminem, it feels so good to be back.
Yes, it's been a while. we'll see how long my voice holds out. It is flu game 2.0 today.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah,
so,
yeah,
Brandon, I've been drinking the tea.
Good. No sugar.
But
yeah, Brandon, to the Crossroads listening audience, man, Brandon's been feeling a little under the weather, and you know he's being a trooper tonight, believe it or not. So I do appreciate Brandon being here to help navigate us through this particular show tonight. Like you said, he's going to try to save his voice. So I think I'm going to do a lot of talking. We might have to put a pause on that. But like Brandon said, we do. Like I said, I do appreciate Brandon, you know, kind of fighting through it. And we do have a special show tonight. We are going to be talking training camp and NFL. If anybody kind of follows the Crossroads Facebook page, we're going to be talking, you know, Colts as well, because you know this is a local show. I'm also going to pick Brandon's brain about his Indianapolis Indians experience that he had over this weekend. But with all that, we also have a couple of NBA tidbits, but we also have a head coach and two-time Horizon League head coach of the year from Wright State University, Katrina Merriweather. We'll be our special guest tonight, and we're going to learn a whole lot about her, right? Because she has some great Indiana ties with the state of Indiana, and. And like I said, she's doing wonderful things over in Ohio with Wright State University. And like I said, we're gonna have a great interview with Coach when she at 7. So appreciate everybody being back on. Brandon, do you want to kick it off with training camp news?
Yeah, and I got a couple good questions for Coach there at Wright State when we have her on. So. I might be taking some swigs of my drink as we're going on with the show. But before we get started with training camp, I would be remiss, I guess, if we didn't start the show by, you know, thoughts and prayers to everybody with the, you know, our listening audience that if they're in El Paso, Texas, Dayton, Ohio, of course, you know, just right down the road with the shootings over the weekend. What we're going to try to do tonight is take everybody's mind off of it a little bit for 2 hours, but I would be remiss if if we didn't say something, at least thoughts and prayers for it, especially with Wright State being there in Dayton, by it. So T's and P's to everyone there involved, and hopefully we can quit this nonsense that's going on currently. So.
Right.
That's all I've got on that. NFL training camp. John, training camps are now officially open. The NFL season has officially kicked off with the Hall of Fame game on Thursday night. I watched a total of 10 minutes of the game. Wasn't really, you know, it got the itch. Football is back. Al Michaels on the TV. Got psyched about it. I did put some money on it. I did bet on it, you know, not too big. Won some money on it, you know. Thank you, Denver. Covered the spread. But, yeah, it's just good to see football back, whether it's good football or bad football. It's back. Blood's flowing. Colts camp's opened up. I know last time we talked, we talked about Andrew Luck's injury. People say not to worry about it. I'm saying to worry about it. He told Peter King from NBC Sports today that he, quote unquote, believes that he should be ready for week one. But we'll see. That does mean he will not play most likely in any of these preseason games for the Colts. So does not look good week one going on the road to San Diego. I mean, I know they're a train wreck right now themselves a little bit, but.
With their roster. The secondary thing with the Colts is. Obviously, Andrew Luck, as you alluded to, he's going to be ready to play week one, not necessarily playing the preseason. Okay. But I'm still not ready to jump off a bridge about it, Brandon. But the secondary kind of question swirling around Colts camp is like, what are they going to do with all these wideouts that they have as far as like roster cuts? I can tell you T.Y. Hilton and Dean Cain and Devin Funchess ain't going anywhere, right? So with the Colts, especially liking utilizing tight ends, you know what I'm saying? Does that leave room for, you know, and hell, even Brandon Marshall, I know I'm, you know, going back and forth here. I mean, even Brandon Marshall was in camp, you know, at one point. So I don't, you know, I just don't know. Is Chester Rogers going to get cut? You know, I know, you know, he's not necessarily everybody's fan favorite around here. There's people, you kind of fit on either side of the fence with him. But, you know, the Colts, it's going to be some cuts made here. And probably going
to be feelings to be hurt.
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to allude to. It's going to be some feelings.
Yeah. You know, Brandon Marshall worked out for the team. And John, my first thing I was thinking is, if they're bringing Brandon Marshall in and they had all off season and they're just now bringing him in, what the hell are they seeing in practice that they're like, we need to see what else is out there. And, you know, I told them if they needed to add any position, it was wide receiver. That's where I felt like it wasn't as high as most people expected. And I took some grief for that.
Are you talking about talent though? You're talking about talent though, right? You're not necessarily talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Talent.
Okay. Okay. Because they got depth. They just don't have this special.
And I'm not saying Brandon Marshall is all God's great and talent. I mean, he's declined over the years. But, you got to wonder. The Colts are thinking, I'm not so thrilled about this wide receiver corp. So they got to bring somebody in. And then they also bring in Mike Gillisley. Mike Gillisley is a name familiar for folks. He played for Buffalo behind Shady McCoy. He also played for the Patriots for a year. So Mike Gillisley was brought in for a workout. I don't know. I haven't seen if he's actually stayed on or Marshall. I know they've worked out, and that's pretty much it right now. There's no contract signed for either one of them or anything, so there'll be more to come to that. But, yeah, Colts, speaking of Buffalo, the Colts go to Buffalo this Thursday night for Game 1 preseason. Jacoby Brissett will be the quarterback starting out for the Colts. Probably see a lot of Brissett, as I said, this season. And just kind of, you know, there's nothing to expect from Game 1. I mean, besides, I guess, hopefully everybody comes out healthy. That's what you're looking
right.
for. I am kind of anxious to see how some of these new defensive guys, how they play. You know, key is if you can keep this offensive line healthy this year. Anthony Costanzo got hurt, if you remember right, in Game 3 of the preseason last year, and it kind of hurt him in that offense when they're going into Week 1 last year with their game. But yeah, I think you just enjoy the Colts are back. You kind of see some of these new names, these kids trying to make the rosters, and you just enjoy it. Don't get your hopes up, Colts fans. But, I mean, you got Brissett. Brissett's going to, you know, lead that offense, and then you got yourself some Chad Kelly in the second half. So I think you sit back and enjoy some of that.
Brandon, here's how I assess the Colts season. Remember, as a Steelers, you appreciate this, I think, as a Steelers fan. Don't Steelers make the playoffs or get to the Super Bowl even when Big Ben misses 4 to 5 games?
Usually, yes.
Yeah, they still make it. So they have a built up team. I'm not gonna blah 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 all over the Pittsburgh Steelers, but that's kind of like how if you take your fandom out of it, right? You kind of appreciate about their organization. That I always thought that anytime he had missed games or whatever, I said, man, they're gonna take a step back, and they wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of, you know, it wasn't even like the next man up mentality. They just knew that, hey, this guy's going to go out here and beat the Jets, and he's the backup. You know what I'm saying? Maybe, and that might be because the Jets haven't been good, you know what I'm saying, you know, in years past. But I always kind of thought that. And so I'm saying now I have to say this. That'll be a similar situation where the Colts would be at, potentially, if you're kind of saying Jacoby Brissett might be utilized more throughout the season, you know, where Andrew Luck might have to sit. Because he's got soreness or whatever. I know that doesn't necessarily. Again, now I got to put my fandom back into it. That doesn't make me feel good, because you know you know consistency is what you want out of, you know what I'm saying, to build offensive consistency, right? So that we can score. I mean, more points you got, that's how you win, right? And that's
right.
What this Colts team is still built on. You know what I'm saying? We have a solid defense. They have a solid defense, but the coach still expected to put points on the board. You know what I mean? That's kind of where they fumbled up. You know what I'm saying? No pun intended. In the Kansas City game last year in the playoffs. So,
mm-hmm.
But remember, like I said, the season is not a dash. It's more so. I'm having a lack of trouble for words, man. It's more so, you know, a broader, you know what I'm saying? If you go 13-0,
right.
Great. It doesn't matter if you go 13-0 or whatever. You know, it matters if everybody's healthy going into the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, so that's kind of
I know I talked about the Colts. I had them at 12-4 in my initial prediction. I thought they had a 12-4
right.
season. I think with Andrew Luck coming in injured, this year, you know, I still had them losing game one at San Diego, but I will adjust and go 11-5. So, yeah, Colts fans might be a little upset me going 11-5, dropping one more game. But
Brandon, that still wins the AFC South.
Well, I mean, here's my thing with the AFC South. I got the Colts 6-0 in the AFC versus the AFC South.
Wow.
So
that's pretty
6-0. Oh yeah, pretty good.
Pretty
so, as Reggie Wayne says, hey, you know we beat your butts every year. So, Houston will probably be the toughest competition because Jacksonville's down in the mid. Tennessee doesn't scare me, especially with their, you know, Mariota could get hurt, and then you have Ryan Tannehill. Jacksonville's god awful.
Right.
I mean, they got Nick Foles in there, but I mean, really, I mean, what?
Tennessee might even pull Mariota.
They will. I think
point.
They will. And then
Houston might pull Mariota at some point.
Houston's very talented.
Here's the thing, Brandon. Houston's in talks, in the trade mix talks. I don't, you know, believe it or not. I mean, you know, but the NFL trade rumors and NBA trade rumors, are, you know, we already know they're different, right? Different in the size of the scale. But they're in talks, the rumor mill's in talk anyway, about getting Melvin Gordon.
Well, today they squashed it. They said they are not interested. They're not interested, and they're happy with the trio of running backs they have.
Well, see now that means. But see, they, that's wild because that means they admitted that they talked.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
I think you, as a GM, I think you have to kick the tires and talk with your staff. I think all 32 teams should talk with each other and say, hey, you know, is this a piece that we should pick up? Johnny wins the prize. It wouldn't be surprising me if he ends up with the Patriots.
Oh, wow. Yeah, then hang another banner.
Yeah. I they wouldn't trade in the division. I don't even think they would trade really in the conference. One team in my head that I think they would kick the tires on there would be actually two teams. I look at the NFC East, and I'm looking at the Redskins and the Eagles both. As possible trade targets. You know, the Eagles always trade with everybody, it seems like, you know. Yeah, they've got I can't even think who their running back is now for some reason. Off the top of my head. Wendell Smallwood and a couple other guys. But you know, the Redskins, they've got this guy who's coming off a torn ACL. Yeah, Jordan Howard's with the Eagles. So you know, never know. They can still trade Jordan Howard straight up for Melvin Gordon. I mean, not saying it's not equal, but I mean, if the Chargers want something to return,
there'd be some other compensation, future assets, whatever, right?
Yeah.
They're not wanting to pay him. I mean, I guess I kind of got a turn. I kind of said I think they would come to an agreement, but
mm-hmm.
it sounds like they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. They don't want to pay him more than $10 million.
Who plays first, Melvin Gordon or Zeke Elliott?
Zeke Elliott plays first because as crazy as Jerry Jones is, he'll come to a realization that he remembers he's a player's guy. You know what I'm saying? Players, he's a player's owner. Looks out for the owners first. So I mean, sorry, the players first.
Mm-hmm.
After he gets Texas billion, but yeah, I think Zeke Elliott plays. He won't be making. You know what I'm saying? Anything comparable to, you know, over, you know what I'm saying, next to the running back and from the Rams, but he'll get a raise, a significant raise to where
yeah.
he'll play. They need a big, yeah, they need their quarterback. Their quarterback is not that great. He's good.
The only other team I could see NFC besides those two is Bruce Arians and the Buccaneers, who need a running back. Because Peyton Barber is not the answer down in Tampa Bay. And if Bruce Arians wants to put a stamp on his offense,
time to take it there. Yeah.
And his time there, then you put Jameis, you put Melvin Gordon, you put Mike Evans, you know, you put them together and see, you know, it's logical. Rondell, you know, so we'll see. This won't be the last we'll hear about it with him. John, the GOAT, Tom Brady, gets another 2-year extension worth $23 million. Is this guy ever going to retire?
Man, I can't hate on Tom Brady or anything that he does, man. He's eating avocado ice cream probably as we speak or something to the accord. Listen, you kind of got to – like I think I said this before. You kind of got to tip your hat, man, because he's in a great system, and he's also – he can make all the throws, so that doesn't mean he's a system player by any means. But Tom Brady's going to finish out 2 more years, I think. At least, you know, it's a barn, you know, it's a major injury or catastrophe. You know what I'm saying? Anything like that happened on the field. I think Tom Brady finishes out his career. And I think Bill Belichick keeps on coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Maybe Bill Belichick just kind of, you know, retires, moves up into, you know. Isn't it like an ownership deal he got, maybe? I could have made that up. They would have to offer him something within the organization, man. He's like, I mean, they have different personalities, but he's like Magic Johnson to the Lakers. Bill Belichick is that to the New England Patriots. So, you know, why would you know, Kraft not want to continue to have his presence around, you know?
Yeah, we had this argument today. We had this argument yesterday at work. And John, I'm looking at the total career and what it's meant for the franchise. Because you got to remember how bad the New England Patriots were for a very, very long time. But I said Tom Brady meant more to the New England Patriots than Peyton Manning did to the Indianapolis Colts. And that's tough to say. But from as bad as the Patriots were. And now, yes, the Colts were bad too at a time, but also they had Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of helped. And then the talent that he had around him. Tom Brady really didn't have a whole lot of talent when he got called in for Drew Bledsoe around him that first year or two. And then he stepped up. John, I watched a game the other night on NFL Network. It was the rookie year for Ben Roethlisberger, 2004. It was the Patriots versus Steelers, and that game was a shootout in 2004. A young Tom Brady, but 2-3 years into his league. And, comparing Tom Brady then to now, it's like the guy hasn't missed a step.
Right.
Some people, maybe say, you know what, Peyton Manning, you know, brought a new stadium to Indianapolis. He brought a whole nother generation of football fans. That's true because we're living here and you see it. But also, you don't know what New England – I mean, New England wasn't football people. They're all basketball.
Right.
Boston Celtics, Boston Red Sox.
Right.
The Patriots weren't even on the list. I mean, Indianapolis, you had the Colts and the Pacers. You didn't have the Bruins, the Celtics, all these teams up there.
Hey, Brandon, you know, that's another fantasy question, man. Who runs Boston now? Is it the Boston Celtics?
Patriots.
You know what I'm saying? Or is it the New England Patriots?
Patriots. I think it's Patriots, Red Sox, Celtics. I think that's the three now in that order. And then the Bruins. Indianapolis, I think it's Indianapolis. I don't know, John. Who'd you give the edge to now, the Colts or the Pacers?
You know, Brandon, it's probably even. It's probably even. I wish, you know, and I hope this is what the hope is. I hope Andrew Luck gets to be 100%. And I hope Victor Oladipo gets to be 100%. Because then, you know, then we got bragging rights. Then we got to kind of figure out, like, what the team kind of looks like with 100% Andrew Luck, or what the team kind of looks like with 100% Victor Oladipo, with the changes now, you know,
right,
that's going to happen. Is it going to be more. I think this is what the players. Well, no, we were just talking NFL. The team, the Pacers put together, still got to hit the shots. They will be very athletic. I said prior to, but they will be more up tempo teams and highlight reel type. But like to answer your question, it's even right now. It's even because based on kind of like on expectations, but our star players on both sides are hurt.
Yeah. Breaking news. I don't know if I have. Do I have the sound effect still? Let's see. Yeah, I do. I mean, it's not huge news.
Big enough.
Breaking news out of the NFL. Michael Crabtree has signed with the Arizona Cardinals. So that's another wide receiver target for Kyler Murray. Crabtree actually was a name that the Colts were thinking about bringing in for a workout, too. Looks like Crabtree, that Colts rumor is over, and he has signed with the Arizona Cardinals. I still think it's the Rams division to lose, and Seattle, I don't think they'll go away without a fight this year. Out there, we do have to have a preview show, John, where it's just NFL and we break down every division. We'll probably do that preview show here in a couple weeks, at a later date. We got about 9 minutes or so before Coach Merriweather joins us. Anything else NFL wise, John?
I think that's it. I think we covered all the topics. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I have a few just quick hitters to kind of fill some time till Coach gets here. John, FIBA has suspended a guy named DJ Cooper, who played at Ohio University, for a failed drug test, John. the drug test came back positive for being pregnant.
He didn't make sure he got the right, you know. That's wild, man. That's wild.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I thought that was wild. Yeah, you got to be smart.
Another quick hitter. It was announced this evening on Twitter by Jeff Goodman. IPFW, John, we don't give them enough love. Some of the Mastodons up there in Fort Wayne. It's weird, John. They are called Purdue Fort Wayne, but their actual their lettering still is IPFW.
Yeah, it's weird, man.
But anyways, they have now will be announced tomorrow that they are joining the Horizon League. An announcement tomorrow. So that's a huge move for IPFW, moving from the Summit to the Horizon League, located here in Indianapolis. Actually, you know, funny, the Horizon League, the same league that Wright State's in. So, you know, Coach will have another team to look forward to with IPFW.
Right. Okay.
So, but yeah, get the love to the Mastodons up I-69. So,
we will.
Looking at local talent here, there's a girl in Noblesville, John, Ashlyn Shade. You probably don't know, many people already know her name right now, but you're going to know it. She's 15 years old, hasn't even played a varsity or, you know, a high school basketball game yet, John. And she's already receiving several Division I offers from people. They're saying she is going to be the next, you know, big thing here in the state of Indiana. But she's only 15 years old. She's going to be Ashlyn Shade. Got to give a shout out to Noblesville Millers. Be a name to hear about in the next 4 years. Kind of like our guy from 15-year-old from that played against LeBron's son. I can't even think of his name now.
Yeah,
absolutely. High school football practices, John, they started yesterday. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little high school football. Some of the conferences have moved around, but, you know, you'd expect – I watched a preview for the Metro Conference here. It talks about Lawrence Central, Lawrence North, Carmel, Warren Central, and everybody says, you know what, the game we circle on our calendar is Warren Central. So everybody wants Warren Central. They won the state last year. Carmel got embarrassed by them. So Carmel says they're shooting for them. Yeah, they said they got embarrassed. So, high school football is about to start in a couple weeks with week one. Friday Night Lights, John, back underway here in Indiana soon.
Man, you got to love it. You know, I love the game, you know what I'm saying, high school football game. But you know what I really love, Brandon, about high school football? The band. The band.
Oh, the band.
Yeah.
I didn't see that from you. Okay.
I do.
I thought you said like referees.
You said referees never.
So what do you like about the band, John? What is it? Fill our listeners
the band,
in.
Anytime you get a band that's good enough to play like a non-traditional like school fight, like you expect the school fight songs, right? But anytime you get like a non-traditional band to play like a top 40 hit, you know what I'm saying? But with band interest, I'm always intrigued by it. I mean, I love it. So like, they used to have bands like, you know, even before my time, Brandon, they used to have bands in pro games. And like he kind of played out. You know what I mean, but I don't know.
You know what band I don't like? I don't like the drummer, the drum corps at the Pacers. I'm sorry, get it out of there. I've been a hater on that Pacers drum line for so many years. There's no need for it in a basketball NBA professional environment. That's seats you can give the people. Try to fill those seats. You can put corporate sponsors there, make a little money. You got to get it out of there.
Those guys feel like somebody. They feel like they're a part of the show.
Yeah, apparently. If you are on hold, we have a couple calls on hold, but we'll take those in a little bit. We got our special guest gonna be joining us here soon, so we'll have them stay tuned. Let's see, John. Let's talk a little baseball real quick. We got a few minutes.
Okay.
I want to call you out on your Baltimore Orioles. You said they wouldn't win 30 games for the year.
Where are they,
John?
At now?
They're at 38.
They went on a win streak.
They're hot. They've won 6 of their last 10. Orioles are getting a little hot. I'll tell you who's not hot, though, is the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox lost 8 straight, swept by the Yankees last night.
Falling out of the playoffs.
Tampa Bay Rays have won 7 straight, so they're pushing up there. Yankees are running away with the division. They're starting to get everybody back healthy. I actually surprisingly late and watched the game last night with the Yankees Red Sox on ESPN, so nothing else on. So it was good to see your boy in the big three, Joe Johnson, ISO Joe, mm-hmm. with a game winner
Joe Johnson,
the 4-point shot.
Joe Johnson, he's going to be the MVP of the big three.
let's hear your what would you have about our local Indianapolis Indians?
Man, I had some other friends kind of go out there, and I just kind of saw their perspective of it. Triple A baseball is not something anybody kind of follows. You have to be like a hardcore baseball nut, I think, my personal opinion, to follow Triple A. Like, you know, guys of course get called up, and as we all know, Tim Tebow was here a couple weeks ago. I just kind of I haven't been in quite some time. I haven't been I haven't been out to Victory Field in probably like eight years, man. It's been a long time. So, it's always been, a fun, inviting atmosphere, whether the Indians win or lose, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, that's kind of how I took it. You just wanted to see something entertaining. But like now I see they have like more fireworks and it's more pyro show. So, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to hear some of your thoughts about it. I know you go more than just like maybe once a year. I just kind of want to hear your thoughts about it.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best stadiums in America to watch a AAA game. We sat front row behind the bullpen for the Indians. By the way, they hated the uniform Saturday night. I asked them. They were inspired by the Incredible Hulk. So it was like Hulk ripping out of the Indians uniform. They were not a fan of them. I asked them if they like any of those things. They don't. But they didn't really interact with the fans too much. I know there's a game going on. Maybe they give a couple foul balls here and there, but for Triple A, you're just kind of sitting on your butt down there. But no, I thought it was a good game. The Indians have a few guys that got called up to the majors and then have came back down. But it's definitely fun to watch. I've seen about 3 or 4 games there live, and they're 6 or 8 games back right now of Columbus. They just got swept by them, so that's not good for them to make the playoffs. And they're 6.5 back currently out in the wild card. But, it's a good – it's cheap. Take your family there. I compare it to my internship. I worked for the Evansville Otters for an internship, and that my favorite thing was some of the promotions they do in between innings. They could probably spice that up a little bit. But now I will tell you this. My only upset thing from that game was the fact that the beer vendor only came down to my section once in that game. So maybe that's what got me sick, was having beer, but maybe he was trying to save me. But the fact that he only came down there one time, I was not a fan of that. So, but no, they end up losing in the ninth inning in that game. But okay. No, it's a great atmosphere, great experience. Take your family. Cheap tickets are cheap. I saw tickets going for $7. So,
wow.
Yeah, AAA, you can't beat that. And you pay $8 and go sit on the lawn, you know. And it's funny, John, you'd appreciate this. So when the visiting team was up to bat on the video board, I took a picture of it. I meant to send to you. But they've got a Thanos face on their on the visiting teams where the logo's at. So they kept showing Thanos' face for it. So, you know, the greatest villain of all time in Marvel,
my opinion. You just finished, the Crossroad listeners don't know, you just finished up Infinity Endgame a couple
again.
Nights ago. So. Again, I thought that was the first time. Oh, how many times have you watched it?
Well, I saw it in theaters, and then I've watched it on digital twice.
I didn't know you saw it yet. Okay.
Yeah, I saw it.
Well, guess what, Brandon? Marvel just released their schedule last week, over the schedule movies, and then today they released like what date they actually come out on. It's on the internet. Anybody who can Google, use Google, find out. But yeah, they released the actual dates. There's two Marvel movies coming out next year. For sure.
Okay.
Eternals and Black Widow.
Okay. Awesome. Well, John, I don't want to take any more time because we've got our guest. I how to do this intro, you know. We got a 2-time Horizon League Coach of the Year, just led the Lady Raiders their best season. Wright State women's basketball coach, Katrina Merriweather. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. I'm ready for basketball season to start back up now. I'm bored.
I love to hear that. Everyone around me knows that there isn't anything but basketball season, and I complain the entire time until it starts.
Nice. John, I'll let you start off a little bit.
Coach Merriweather, Jonathan Birdsong, finally good to talk to you. Finally glad you came on to talk a little hoops with me and Brandon today.
Thanks for having me.
we want to talk a little bit about your deep roots here in the state of Indiana. As everybody on call and listening right now knows, you're the head coach of Wright State, the head women's basketball coach at Wright State University. That's actually in Dayton, Ohio. But you, like I said, you have great roots here in Indiana. Rather me ramble. Sorry, this is what I do. When did you know you were basketball special? Because it's an honor for you to be on here with us. When did you know you were basketball special? I'm gonna tell everybody I'm gonna tell your story because I've been, like I said, we do a lot of research when we have our guests on. when did you know you were basketball special? Was it before you went to Cathedral or after?
Oh, wow. my basketball stuff started with my dad and his nonprofit, The Family. And the concept of basketball, everybody grows up in Indiana, and I think it has a reputation for having very fundamental players playing the game what we call the right way. And I think that my dad and my grandfather and then the support of all of my family, my dad starts this organization called The Family, and it's these young inner city kids from 10 to 18. And during that time, you are getting mentored by the older girls. And then as you get older, you become a mentor. And so you learn how to teach the game simultaneously while you're playing it. And I think that probably has to be credited with the beginning of everything. Cathedral is a very special place to me. Obviously, we had a lot of fun and success and memories there. But I know I wanted to coach when I got to Cincinnati. My dad had let me coach some AAU teams that had some incredibly talented players, like Shire Eli, Jackie Baptiste, Ashley Allen, just the list goes on and on of all these players that I got to coach all the way until I came back and got to coach Alex Bentley and Skylar Diggins and I think when you have all those talented players, one, it's really hard to lose. So you fall in love with basketball and coaching just because you win all the time. And it feels really good. And even the mistakes that you make, shoot, the players are more talented than the other team. So you just, they cover you up. And then you look pretty good at something and you don't really know if you're any good at it all. But you do end up winning a little bit. So that probably started it all. And then I had some awesome coaches at Cincinnati that secured that I wanted to do it in college.
Okay. Well, you kind of jumped the gun. I was gonna ask you about your time at Cincinnati as a player. How does an Indiana All Star, you know, saying break all these Indiana schools' hearts, had to, and end up in Cincinnati?
Well, I think it was a little bit of I had gotten it narrowed down, and the really cool part for me and going through that process was I played volleyball at Cathedral. And anyone who knows anything about Gene Kesterson and Cathedral volleyball, they just win championships. Well, I never played in class basketball. So there was no, we only played based on enrollment. Like, we played everybody. So we played the Ben Davises and the Lawrence Norris and all that good stuff. Well, that year in particular, my senior year, we go to the state championship game. Well, that goes well into November. And the signing period is in the middle of November. I only had time to take one official visit between our last volleyball game and actually the signing period in the fall. So me and my teammate, Tammy Douglas, who had been my teammate in AAU since we were 12, and we had some ferocious competitions because we never played on the same team in high school, we decided to go on this visit to Cincinnati. We fall in love with it, and there really wasn't any reason to take another visit because we were convinced that was the right place for us. So I didn't really it was so much different over 20 years ago. You know, it wasn't about tweeting and scholarship offers and all this other stuff. We just wanted to play.
Okay, I got you. And that was during that time, that was when Cincinnati was in Conference USA?
Yes. Yeah, who can even keep that straight anymore? The way
I know, right?
Conference everywhere, but yes, it was Conference USA at the time.
Okay. You played for Lori Pirtle. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. Man, I lost my train of thought. Sorry about that. Well, okay. I'm sorry. Randy, got a question?
he's flustered. Yeah. So, Coach, let's go to the current time. So, when you went to Wright State, what did you love about Wright State that you're like, you know what, I'm gonna go after this team.
Well, I love Mike Bradbury. So, the head coach that brought me on in 2010 was the assistant coach at Cincinnati. And he recruited me there. So I've known him since I was about 16 years old. So this is now a 23-year-long relationship. And he tells me that he thinks he's going to get the job at Wright State. And one of my best friends, Regin Stewart, is in the Hall of Fame here at Wright State. And I've been to visit a couple of times, and I kept saying, there isn't anything there. Like, why do you want that job? That job is awful. And so because he had coached me, he just said, Trina, shut up and just come look at it. So I come look at it, and it's beautiful. They have grown in every direction. There's restaurants everywhere, a full mall, and it wasn't the place that it had been in the 90s. So honestly, I came to Wright State because of Mike Bradbury, and I trusted that anything that he did was going to be successful, and I really just wanted to be a part of it and help him out.
Okay. I've actually been to Wright State. I actually went to a game there, and I was trying to think back. I think it was 2007 or 2006. I was, I think Ball State, the women's basketball team, was playing Wright State then. So I went to a game there, and back when I was actually good at, still in shape for basketball, I worked out with the women's basketball team. I was in charge of their scout team, so I loved that part. And so I love the campus. I was there. We got there early in the day and enjoyed the campus, and. We were probably a little obnoxious in the stands during the game, but you know, hey, it is what it is.
That's what makes it fun.
So, Coach, this past year you went 27-7, 16-2. got won the first school's first regular season title. You went to the NCAA tournament against Texas A&M. Kind of talk about that experience this year. I know you've had the last couple of years have been very successful as well. So what was your did it exceed your expectations, or did you know, hey, we're going to have a great squad. I expect us to go to the NCAA tournament this year. What kind of sum up this past season?
Well, I do my best to keep a level head. I don't get too high with the highs or low with the lows. So every season for me is one into itself, and it's got to go through every step of the process. Like, we have our kids in for the summer. It's the first time they meet each other. Our hours are limited, where you only get to work out basketball-wise 4 hours a week. You're just trying to get a feel for how good they are and how well they're going to mesh together. And this past year's team didn't show any signs in the summer that they were going to be a championship caliber team. And not from talent. We usually do a pretty good job of making sure that's there. It was the chemistry where we had injected Angel Baker, who was this awesome freshman that I honestly could have started every game this past year, but as such a team player, let me bring her off the bench and didn't complain or think twice about it. To Mikhail Miller, who plays with an extreme chip on her shoulder, that transferred from Arizona and has just had this amazing run in junior college and the national championships. And I had to figure out how to get those kids together with a very top-heavy four-year senior class. And it presented its challenges for sure, because there was some jockeying for a position. There was, girl stuff. And I wasn't so sure by the end of summer what was going to happen. But my staff did such a tremendous job of handling things off the floor and the small things in practice. And this team legitimately decided that nothing mattered except taking all the talent that they had and figuring out how to win a championship. And when they made up their mind, it wasn't anything that I did or the staff did. When those 14 players made up their mind that that's what they were going to do, they did it. And the credit of 100% goes to them for buying in.
Okay. Coach, I got to know. So this year the women's bracket was actually leaked accidentally online, I think several hours before it actually came out. Did you guys get a sneak peek of it, or did you guys wait until the actual brackets were unveiled?
Well, we tried to keep it from the kids, but in this day of social media, there's no way. Yeah, there's no way. And I have to admit, like, it was really disappointing. And we did get a letter, and I'm sure every team did, from the NCAA apologizing, and ESPN apologizing for the mishap. And it's just really unfortunate, because it is a moment that is, if you've ever been in that position before, and it happened at Cincinnati when I was a player, this year name popping up on that screen is really exciting. But to be honest, we did the show anyway, and our kids, they seemed like they had no idea. So I think it was exciting regardless of the slip-up. But it, for us adults, I think a lot of coaches were very, very unhappy and disappointed. But, you know, when you see them be okay, that's all that really matters.
What do the mid-majors have to do, or are they currently doing everything you think right to get more bids into the NCAA women's tournament? It seems like, and I was comparing both tournaments, the men's and the women's, but it seems like still the mid-majors are being left out of the at-large bids for the women's tournament. I mean, what do these mid-major teams have to do besides win their conference tournaments?
Well, I think it's really tough, because you're just dealing with human beings that are making this decision, and everybody's got a perspective. And what's better, the fifth-place team in a Power Five or the second-place team in a mid-major conference? And I think that that is just a matter of opinion. And when you go into your non-conference schedule, the only way that you can really battle this is for mid-majors to play these Power Five schools in the preseason, and you got to beat them. You know, and then you can't lose games during your conference. Like, you got to beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, and then you got to upset a few. And I think that that in itself is a skill. Scheduling is honestly the toughest part of being a head coach. If I could throw that responsibility on somebody else, I absolutely would. Getting the team right, I'm telling you, getting the rest right, the teams right, the travel right, you know, the amount of days in between. It's just really tough. You know, you want to pick the Power Five teams that you feel like you can compete with and possibly beat. Those are the teams that don't really want to play you. So,
right.
You know, it's But that, to me, that's my long-winded way of saying you just got to play people, and you got to play them, and you got to beat them. And when you don't and you can't, then I don't think we have a whole lot to complain about. But it would be nice if there were more people in the room that said, hey, you know, they're 16-2. Again, Green Bay in our league is the only school that's been in the position to get bids without winning the tournament. The at-large bid, and we would love to be that team that, regardless if we win the conference tournament or not, we have a legitimate shot that our RPI is high enough that we can actually get in.
Okay. I got one last one, and I always like this part of with teams. Coach, I just watched a video the other night. Your girls were visiting the Goddard School. And with the kids and stuff, how important is it to get your girls and the team in the out in the community and kind of getting them out there with the kids and all that?
Well, I'll tell you what I believe I have a reputation for is we have a tendency to recruit kids who otherwise may not be recruited by other schools, and whether that is because they have struggled academically in high school or they have gotten into some minor trouble while they were in high school. It is really, really important that these kids recognize that these scholarships, they're not just given away. Somebody is paying for them. The students that are sitting next to you in class, people who are donating money. And one thing that I do not tolerate when we're recruiting and we're picking our team are bad character kids. So when you see our kids at the Goddard School, when you see them with the Optimist Club at the Children's Hospital, they are 100% phenomenal. And especially anytime there's any little kids around, they do a great job. And I think that it just reminds them to stay young and to keep things fresh. But more importantly, a lot is given to them. And now they earn it through practice and all this other stuff. But they are given a lot, and there are a lot of people out there that don't have as much and have not had the same opportunities that they have had to play summer ball and to have people who care about them and do things for them. So to put them in a position to mingle with everybody, regardless of color or socioeconomic background, they will meet people that have more, they'll meet people who have less, and I think it's just really important to showcase that our kids are really amazing, despite what my reputation is that gets thrown on them some, which is, oh, if you play at Wright State for Trina, oh, you know, your grades must be questionable or, you know, your behavior must be questionable. And it's not true. And again, we have phenomenal kids that get good grades that are awesome in the community. And I just want them to always get in the habit of serving and giving back. And if we can just put kids out every year from here that are givers and not takers, that are servers and not entitled, I think that we are doing just a little piece of maybe making society just a little better based on how they go into the world after they leave here.
Beautiful. That was well said. I loved it.
Thank you.
Coach, I have a couple questions about kind of pertaining to, like, when you're on the court. How do you channel frustration when a referee call doesn't go your way?
So out of all the things that I'm pretty decent at, you go and pick the one thing that I struggle with incredibly. Again, my personality, and officials have a very, very tough job, so let's start there. They have a very tough job. And then when you've got a coach on the sideline that's super passionate, that looks at every game as an opportunity to compete, but I also view it as fighting for our kids, right? So whenever a call is missed or they're getting fouled and I feel like we're not getting the same calls, it is really tough. Officials have a hard job whenever I'm on the sideline, and not because I'm disrespectful or because I yell or I curse or anything like that. It just is, I like answers, and I like to talk during the game. We got to get this thing figured out. But they've been really good. So my frustrations are to the referees, again, the officials talk to me, and that helps. My staff is, again, phenomenal. And I think that it just is, it's just that heat in the moment thing. And as long as no one takes it personal, it's usually okay.
All right. Well, we still have a way for this season to kick off. I know school's, you know, right around the corner. What kind of pressure have you put on yourself going into this season?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
okay.
Not. The one thing that I think coaches struggle with, especially at the collegiate level, is unrealistic expectations. We haven't done enough yet with this team for me to have any expectations at all outside of them working as hard as they can and being the best people they can be. That's it. That's all I got. I will figure out when we can actually practice 20 hours a week and when we can lift and condition and get on the track and get in the pool. And when we can do all this stuff and I can see how durable we are, when I can see how tough we are, then I can give you some idea of what this team is capable of. But up until then, I mean, really, we're just scratching the surface with only being able to work out 8 hours a week.
Right.
That's no indicator of of what it's going to look like when it's 20 hours a week and a bunch of games. So I don't really have any, but they are always required to, again, work as hard as they can and be great people. And if they do that, then I'm usually okay with what the results are.
Okay. Well, you kind of allude, so like when you talk about recruiting players, do you look for players who kind of like do you see yourself in some of the girls when that you target?
Oh well, I was a very average college player, so I don't need too many Trinas. Since there's a team full of Trinas, we're gonna have a very mediocre season, and we don't want to do that.
Oh, you're so modest. So modest. Okay.
What we look for, and I'll tell you, the first thing is we run that dribble drive, and so you have to have a motor. It is very tough for kids who can't play really, really fast to have any success here, because when you speed them up, their skill set gets impacted if they're not used to playing that fast. So I have a tendency to recruit kids that are, again, people use the word athletic, and in short, they are, but more importantly is their motor. Like, you just got to be able to play really, really fast. Like, we get up between 70 and 80 shots a game. You know, we get offensive rebounds. We press. We play such a high-tempo game that, like, you've got to be able to play fast. So that's always the first thing. And then secondly, I just like kids that are versatile. You know, if you can do multiple things and get in that dribble drive, it really helps. Than if you are specialized in only a shooter or only a driver. It makes it really tough on everybody else on the floor with you to create if people can play off you and sit in the lane and not get out there and guard you and that kind of thing. So those are probably the things.
Okay. Coach, do you have any personal rituals that you perform before each game?
Absolutely.
To like, you know, you said absolutely? Okay.
Absolutely, like clockwork. One, I'm a very tardy individual, so I'm usually racing into the locker room. Because there's always some dramatic something. My hair won't curl right, you know. One time the security tag was still on my suit. You know, like it's always going to be something. or I'm on the phone, and I leave my house late. When I get to the minute that I get to the gym, because I talk to the kids twice before the game starts. But so before I get to the gym, I lay everything out. I take out my Bible. I paint my nails, and I read the 23rd Psalm and I pray. And then after we go out to the court, right before they do introductions, I pray again during the national anthem, and that is like clockwork, no exceptions. Every single game.
Okay. Do you have a hype song? Do you have your own hype song?
I do not have my own hype song. The music that these kids listen to, first of all, they don't know how to listen to it low. And our coach's room is connected to their locker room. So my hype music is whatever their hype music is. Yeah. and, of course, I got some Cardi B fans. Now it's Megan Thee Stallion. Like, it, you know, they keep me pretty hip because whatever's new actually blasts through the walls, whether it's the office or on game day. So we can hear everything.
Okay. Last question I have for you. We definitely are going to come see you when you guys come here to take on IUPUI. Me and John are going to go to this game because I'm going to be yelling. I'm going to try to yell more than you because I want to be able to come see us. So we're going to come to it. And I got to know, anytime we interview a coach, I always have to ask, how's that jump shot still?
As long as I'm stationary, it's still pretty good. Yeah, what I can't do, like I can play a little bit of horse. I'm much better at pig because it's a little shorter.
Right.
But what I cannot do is run up and down the floor and still make a shot. So, you know, it's decreasing year by year what I'm able to do. And the ball is still going to basket. But every once in a while, you have to show them that back in the day, you did play a little bit. So every once in a while, I'll go out there and shoot. And it's funny, the freshmen, because now I don't look anything like how I used to when I played. They stare like they just picked me up off the street, and I never played basketball a day in my life. So you got to show them every once in a while.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, Coach, I want to thank you for joining us today. It was a pleasure. I don't want to take too much of your time. It was fun. We definitely want to have you on again. Right, John?
If we can get you on again, like I know once the season kicks off, I think Coach likes to be modest. That's what I get. Coach likes to be real modest. But you can't be modest about single digit losing records. I'm just being totally transparent with you. You can't be modest about that. But we do appreciate you coming on, and like, you know, we definitely will try to connect back with you for sure.
Yeah.
No, I look
absolutely
forward to it. I would love to be on again. You just tell me when and we'll figure out how to make it happen.
Perfect. Sounds good. All thank right. you, Coach. And we'll see you this fall.
Oh, thank you so much. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, John. That was Wright State women's basketball coach Katrina Merriweather. The modest coach Merriweather.
Very modest.
You know, they talk about 70, 80 shots. I'm thinking the Golden State Warriors here throwing up some shots.
Right.
You know, they only play 10-minute quarters. So, but no, I thought that was a great interview with her. We got to find out her side, the girl with the girls, what to expect with the teams, the mid-majors, how hard it is for these mid-majors in women's basketball to make it to the NCAA tournament. And then, you know, what kind of girls she looks for and how important it is to get her team and her girls out in the community. You know, and it was all great answers from her. I'm excited we had her on, and I hope they have a great season. And definitely, John, me and you, we got to get to the game when they come here to play IUPUI.
Yep, we will.
So, absolutely. All right, John, I got a few more things on our agenda for tonight. We got about an hour left. I know we won't probably go the whole distance, but
I'm going to send out a bat signal to Sweet Lou, man. Hopefully they'll call in.
Yeah, Sweet Lou, if you're listening, we need you to call in. I want to make sure you're still alive, man. We need to talk. John, first off, I'm going to kind of swift gears quickly. Harley Race passed away, John. Kind of talk a little. I know you've watched a lot of Harley Race matches back in the
day.
Kind of talk
man.
About Harley, the importance of him and kind of how big of a blow this is for the wrestling community.
Harley Race was like I don't never remember him ever being a face. Ever. You know what I'm saying? And like he's the guy that was over – you know, before Ric Flair was over, you know what I'm saying, was the champ, you know what I'm saying, in and out, whenever they wanted to take the title off of him, before Ric Flair, it was Harley Race, you know what I'm saying, more of a no-frills type of wrestler, you know what I'm saying, reality-based, not necessarily, you know, coming out there with a dog or coming out there with blue hair or anything like kind of goes for now, you know what I'm saying, but Harley Race was, you know, and he was, Brandon, he's actually really tough, that's the thing,
mm-hmm.
there's also, if people go on YouTube, there's actually stories where wrestlers talk about who Harley Race beat up in the back room because whoever was acting like a jackass, right? So Harley Race is, you know, was a double tough guy. He competed later on in his years, like, because everybody gets a paycheck from Vince, who's a wrestler. You have to. If me and you started a tag team tomorrow, Brandon, we'd have to get – our goal would be to get to the WWE, right?
Yep.
So, again, he wrestled many years for the – which was then World Championship Wrestling, NWA, until, you know what I'm saying, they went full commitment with Ric Flair, you know what I'm saying, because Harley Race was, you know, older. And, like, he spent some years in the WWF, then WWF, as the King, which was a whole – it was actually, Brandon, there's another story about that whole deal because Jerry Lawler tried to sue the WWE. This is before Jerry Lawler started working for the WWE. J.R. suit because that's his gimmick. They put a king hat and you know and robe around you know Harley Race. Now you know, but now it, you know it's all those stories you know some behind the scenes stories that that I find intriguing, that people find intriguing about with Harley Race and some of the things that he brought to the table. He's like I said, he's not a frill guy like Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan. He's not a big personality. He just kind of got it done from a heel standpoint. Harley Race also, when he transitioned from being an active wrestler, you know what I'm saying, he became a manager because he could, you know, quite honestly, he could talk. He talks like a bar guy. Like, he talks like this is a guy you don't get in a bar fight with and you ain't going to win, right? So a lot of times promoters put him with guys who couldn't talk. At one time he was with Lex Luger. At one point he was with Big Van Vader. At one point he, you know, mentored and then Triple H, who was wrestling for WCW. So he's played an important role in, you know what I'm saying, historically. I know, like a lot of times, you know, his because all of his history happened in the 70s and in like late 60s, man, you know, it's kind of forgotten amongst some of today's wrestling fans. But, man, Harley Race, losing Harley Race is a huge blow from a wrestling standpoint, wrestling community standpoint. And I said, I'd be hard-pressed, you know what I'm saying, not to talk about some of his greatness. I can't necessarily tell you some of his greatest matches. I always remember the matches he had with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He sold the best probably for Hacksaw Jim Duggan when they were trying, when WWF was trying to get Hacksaw Jim Duggan over to be like their next guy or to be like, you know, you remember So they put him in there, you know, two rough guys and rough and tumble guys, man. Him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan would go at it, man. But, you know, to get the kid over, to get the younger guy over, you know, Harley Race, you know, saying did his best work with Hacksaw. So,
Harley Race go. I watched his match on WWE Network the other night with it was the steel cage match between him and Ric Flair for the NWA title. And, you know, but even back then, just how beautifully done it was, how well it went.
Right. They tell the story.
John, the fans were invested from the start, you know.
Oh, yeah. And Brandon, Ric Flair's like a heel.
Yeah.
In some of their altercations, like they, you know, that was the uniqueness of the NWA. They didn't care if heels wrestled one another. You know what I mean? But yeah, great matches we had with Ric Flair. There's a lot of great matches he's had with, you know, the Briscoe brothers, and you know, I encourage everybody to go to YouTube and you know, research Harley Race.
Absolutely. speaking of wrestling, another thing everybody needs to check out, if you get a chance, you're a big wrestling fan, Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. He had one interview with Hulk Hogan. It was 2 hours long. You probably listened to it in spurts. I listened to it for an hour, and then the next hour I listened to it. A lot of interesting stories, just not about Hulk Hogan's career, but also his upcoming and with Vince. Actually, before I go to that, I'm sorry I forgot to mention.
Right.
How awesome was it, John, that Vince McMahon paid for the entire medical expense for Harley Race?
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
I know Vince don't give Vince a lot of enough credit when he does boneheaded things. But you know what I'm saying, when he does step up, man, I don't really see it celebrated, but you know.
Yeah. So but no, it was Hulk Hogan talking about his time coming up with Vince Senior and then Vince Junior coming to get him and then his fallout with I don't know why I'm thinking Tony Blant, Vern Gagne. Falling out with him, with the territories.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of talked about, it was interesting because he started talking about his match with Andre and then the Ultimate Warrior match with, you know, and all Stone Cold Steve no punches, you know, they were very open.
Mm-hmm.
The Ultimate Warrior won the match done in about 5 minutes. And Hogan's like, we're just getting started. And like, you could see, I went back and watched the match where he told him during the headlock was, he's like, let's get it over. Let's go finish. Let's go home. And Hogan's like, dude, we're not home right now. We've got these fans. So having to calm the Warrior down because his nerves were going 1,000 miles a minute. so they talked about that, but they're going to have Hogan on again to talk a little bit more about the NWO, his WCW run and such. But if you get a chance to listen to it, it's a great listen. I know it's 2 hours, but well worth the listen. You can fast forward through the commercials because Stone Cold has commercials on his podcast, unlike us. So we're here for the people. John, one last thing I have, and then we can go wherever you have, but Carmelo Anthony had his interview with Stephen A. Smith this past Friday.
Right.
It was about 16 minutes long. I do have about a 3-minute segment that I want to play for the for our listening audience if they didn't catch it, and then kind of go into a Q&A with you on Carmelo Anthony. So let's play that 3-minute clip right now, and then we'll go into it.
The last time we saw you in an NBA uniform, you were playing for the Houston Rockets.
Correct.
10 games in, actually recently off a 28-point performance against the Brooklyn Nets, you were basically let go by Daryl Morey and the Houston Rockets.
Correct.
Talk to us about whether or not that's something you expected. Were you surprised by it? Did you have an issue with it?
I was surprised by it big time, right? It went from, oh, this is the piece that we want. This is the piece that we need. Mind you, we've been talking for 3 years, 4 years. They were trying to get me to come to the Houston Rockets. And I finally went there. They finally said, okay, this is the piece that we need. So I get there, and I'm thinking everything is good. Like, I'm doing everything I got to do. I never missed a practice, did all my work. I was, you know, real professional with everybody there. I don't think there's one person there that I could say that I wasn't a professional there. I did what I had to do, did my work. And then the 10th game come, I just didn't understand where that come from. Right? I actually reached out to Daryl first. Mm-hmm. And said, can we talk about how can we make this better? What can we do to, you know, to fix this? What can I do to fix this? But then he had in mind that he wanted to come talk to me, too, about mm-hmm. releasing me and letting me go. So now, I didn't like how that went down.
This is 10 games in.
10 games in.
A 10-time All-Star, 6-time All-NBA player. 10 games, and the Houston Rockets said goodbye to you. And from what my understanding was, and I want to make sure that I'm clear, you play a game against the Oklahoma City Thunder, your now former team. Y'all lost that night on November 8th.
Mm-hmm.
You traveled to San Antonio to play the next game.
Yeah.
And you were informed on the trip to San Antonio. What exactly did Daryl Morey say to you when he met with you?
I was actually in San Antonio, in my room, getting ready for the game. And me and Daryl were supposed to speak that night because I had reached out to him previously about just a heads up me, like what's going on, let me know what I can do. Like, I'm here to help the team. Like, let me know what I got to do. But he had, you know, he came in and he was just like, look, basically your service is no longer needed. And I'm like, hold on, what the hell are you talking about? He's like, nah, things just not working out. And you got to figure out something to do. I'm like, how the hell am I going to figure something out to do? I got a game tomorrow. Nah, you're not going to suit up tomorrow. So then I started taking it even deeper. I'm like, you mean it? He told me I wasn't going to make the rotation. I'm like, I can't make a 9-man rotation. That's what you're trying to tell me. I've already starting to accept the fact that I got to come off the bench, which was very hard for me. I accepted that, and I moved on from that, right? But you telling me that I can't make a 9-10-man rotation on this team is deeper than basketball.
So when you say it's deeper than basketball, be specific. What do you mean?
Well,
by that?
I mean, at my point, at that time, that's what I was feeling. Like, yo, this is deeper than basketball. Obviously, you know, this was I was on a 10-game trial period. Like, this is not something that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is something that's been talked about over these first 10 games of the season.
That was it, John. That was part of the conversation with Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
You know, and it goes on. He talks, you know, you telling me I can't make a 15-man roster on 30 NBA teams? John,
right.
As much as we give crap to Carmelo Anthony, the guy should be on an NBA franchise right now. I'm going to tell you that right now. He still has game. I put the question up on Facebook and on the Instagram account. Does Carmelo mm-hmm. have enough game to make a roster? I think he does. I think he can help somebody. I don't want him to go off in the sunset. I want him to come back. He may, and you might not like this, John. To me, he is the most decorated USA Olympian to ever play the game of basketball.
Not over Charles Barkley.
He holds all the records.
Ah.
He holds all the records. Most points, most rebounds.
Okay,
most assists.
We can go tit for tat, but like Charles is iconic. But okay, you're right though. You kind of right. So Charles is iconic, so that kind of takes him off the plate. Okay,
yeah.
I go for that.
So,
right.
Thoughts on Carmelo in that interview?
You know, man, Brandon, I want to be on his side, too, like 100%, but I can't. Because, like, part of the interview, he's, like, kind of, like, to me, coming off as whiny. He's being – he he's using the media in this regard to try to like basically punk a team. He's like, man, he's too good to go the Big Three route. Let's be honest, okay? He's actually too good to go to play in China, you know. But it's like, if Vince Carter can sign another agreement with the Atlanta Hawks, and he's, you know, 42 years old, you telling me Carmelo Anthony, you know, I kind of, basketball, he's got to join a roster. He's saying that, Brandon, that he's going to be humble, but I don't think that's what happens when he gets out there on the floor. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's accustomed to being a volume shooter, or he's accustomed to touching the ball so many times, or, you know, passing out a double team or spinning it, whatever. He's accustomed to touching the ball probably 80% of the time. And, you know, a leopard can't necessarily change the spot. You can't tell a guy said, okay, man, you're used to touching and getting 80 touches a game. You're going to go down to 10. You know, so will somebody give him a shot? I hope so. I hope maybe, it doesn't have to be out of desperation. It could just be out of need. A team like Toronto could use Carmelo Anthony. They're going to have a little scab, you know, obviously, because the championship ain't coming this year, right? Because the guy bailed on you. But like, would Carmelo kind of, for them, feel the need, you know, they're going to win games. They're going to make the playoffs. He's going to be counted upon to make shots. So somewhere like that would be apropos in my eyes for Carmelo Anthony. Again, he's going to have to humble himself from being an 80% kind of guy to maybe like a 10 to 20% guy. Not even 10 to 20, you know. And I don't think, I don't think he can.
One team I think
somewhere in that interview, I don't think he can. But like one team, you said what now? One team.
I think one team I think would be that should bring him on, that it would give him an offensive spark. He could be that veteran in the locker room. You know, I know he wants to win a title. That was Carmelo's talk. He wants to go to a team that can win a championship, and I understand that. But
yeah,
I keep thinking of Memphis Grizzlies as a team that he can kind of be that point in the locker room. I know they got Ja Morant, and they've got a young team, but they need somebody that can say, pull somebody to the side as a veteran, and be like, hey, man, we gotta get you together, you know? And
In the NBA you grew up on, a guy like that, you know what I'm saying, a Ricky Pierce, I'm trying to think, somebody who was a double-digit scorer maybe not a mega-level all-star player like Isaiah Thomas was or whomever, but like once they went to a different team, a younger team, they kind of accepted their role as what you're saying, because, again, that is a very young team, and him on that team, it would be very intriguing, you know. Again, he'd be expected to like kind of help them navigate their way to the next step, you know what I'm saying? As much as we dog Carmelo Anthony, he has played in the playoffs, you know.
Yeah, he's went to one Eastern Conference Finals.
Right, he has played in the playoffs. If Tracy McGrady's the Hall of Famer, shoot, Carmelo Anthony got to be, you know, without a second thought. So,
well, it's because it's a basketball Hall of Fame, and he's won a title in the college. He's the most decorated Olympian ever.
Right.
They should at least put him in the Team USA this year. Put him on Team USA. Let him showcase some stuff that he has it. Let him showcase it. That's a great opportunity. Then somebody will pick him up. I texted you. I'd like to see the Pacers. I know you hate it. Hell, give it a 3-month trial run until while Depot's out.
I don't hate it.
Bring in Melo, see if he gets some shots.
Yeah, right. Again, I mean, I wouldn't hate it. It's just, you know, we're going to the playoffs, Carmelo. Like, and then when Victor comes back, he's the guy that we depend upon, you know. But I think he, like you said, he wants to win a championship, man. And Golden State Warriors or the Clippers or the Lakers, you know, they're not running, you know, saying to pull him to be on their team.
And Houston doesn't want him. So
no.
The only other team in the Eastern Conference I could see, if they could get him cheap, and it's not about the money, because Carmelo said in that interview, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it's not about the money, Brooklyn.
Right.
I mean, he's played for the Knicks. Go to Brooklyn. He's back home still to finish his career with Brooklyn.
Brent, I said that 2 years ago, man. That wouldn't be bad. And actually, that wouldn't be bad, because then that would get people talking, And that would get, you know, that wouldn't be bad. Kyrie, is he going to regress? Is this going to be like his version of Cleveland before he had? Because like we all know Kevin Durant ain't playing.
Right.
That might
I'm
be
telling
Brandon,
you.
You know, maybe we start that rumor swirl, right? Maybe we get Carmelo, or we'll start, not a rumor swirl, maybe we'll get that, you know, that wave going. Carmelo to Brooklyn.
It just makes perfect sense because he gets to finish his career in New York, kind of where he was most, well, I guess you could say most successful. It'd be perfect for him. He'd got good teammates.
Yeah.
They have a shot to make go deep with Durant after he's back, give him 2 years. We'll see. My favorite though, Carmelo Anthony highlight, John, folks at Crossroads Nation, if you haven't seen it, please go to YouTube. Which one is it, John? Let's see if you can guess it.
I thought you were going to say the Roy Hibbert block.
Nope. Go to YouTube, type in Carmelo Anthony on the ground. Just type that in. So when he was with Denver, there was a play. Carmelo was going to shoot it, and they called a travel on him because the defender moved out of the way. Carmelo fell to the ground. John, he laid there for two more possessions. The ball was inbounded, went down the other end, got stolen. Everybody's running back. Carmelo's still sprawled out in the middle of the court by the lane. His own player trips over him going for a layup. It is the best Carmelo Anthony highlight ever. I'll put a picture up on Crossroads Sports. And that video, that link, it is hilarious. I laugh every time I see it.
Carmelo, he'll be on the team. We're going to make it
I hope so. Absolutely. John, any – well, I guess, hold on. Shout-out Ball State football. Practices have started. Fan Jam, August 17th, out at Schumann Stadium. You go out there, get your pictures taken, get your autographs for the football team. Practices have started, and we're keeping track of them here at Crossroads. We will be live there for a game or two. We'll be at Purdue this fall for a couple games. Ball State football, Fan Jam, August 17th, and then August 31st, Ball State versus IU, the Ruoff Home Mortgage Kickoff Classic at Lucas Oil Stadium on the 31st of August. Get your tickets now. Support your two local college teams playing each other there. And John, any last things you got?
Oh man, I can't wait to pick a perfect day to go to the Indiana State Fair. State Fair started over the weekend, and I can't wait. The traffic over going between East 38th Street to West out West is obviously crazy once you get past there, man. But I've been to some other fairs around the Midwest and down south, between Ohio and Tennessee, and still nothing like the Indiana State Fair. So I encourage anybody who in our listening audience who either live here in Indianapolis or are going to plan on a visit in the next 2 weeks, because the fair still goes on for the next 2 weeks, man, go to the Indiana State Fair. It's an awesome experience. Awesome.
Hey, I got a personal question for you.
How does it
feel knowing you have a freshman now?
Oh my God, dude! Yeah, you threw me for a loop on that one. It is very maturing, Brandon, because now we don't live in a bubble. Because of how I raised my daughter, I don't necessarily raise her to necessarily be in a bubble. But you know, like now you're taking a step into the way of adulthood. You're adolescent, then you become a teenager, and then, you know, 18, by the grace of God in the United States, you're an adult when you're 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that to be true. No, you might be an adult but the United States, there's still some adulting to do between the, you know. But anyway, but no, man, to answer your question, it has been an experience to kind of help her. My daughter's she transitioned from a private school to now going to a more public school. So it is a bit of I went through a similar situation when I was a kid, but it is like, so it's a bit of a nostalgic for me to try to help her transition because like in the private school kind of world, that's what I mean by bubble. There's a lot of things they are very protective of as far as information and as far as how they handle, like, you know, I don't want to say scandal, but how they handle situations, whether it be positive or negative, how they handle situations is a little bit different than when you're in a more public surrounding, public school type environment. So, it, like I said, man, it's been fun. I will say that, and it's been very, like, you know, your kid is no longer a little kid no more. You know,
I'll try to make you feel old.
I never will feel old, bro. Because like Coach Merriweather, man. Again, man, I'm glad she came on, dude. It's like, you know. Something, to be honest with you, Brandon, it's something you pray for, something I pray for. I pray for, you know, different things, man, like, you know, being, have us having a great, not to make this a whole biblical show or anything like that, but us having a great interview and having great guests is, like, kind of something I pride myself on, as you know. Now the whole Crossroads listening audience knows. But, I can still run down the court, bro. So Coach Mayweather says you couldn't do it, but, yeah, I can still run down the court. I can at least make it up there, like, five times. But, so I don't ever feel old, but, man, I never feel old, but – No, nah, man, it has been a transitional experience for me, man, because like I said, she's a teenager now, and we got to go through the teenager experience.
Oh yeah. Close us out, John. Any last things, and then close us out.
Oh man, I appreciate everybody listening, whether they be friend, family, or even foe, to keep it all F, right? But in all seriousness, we do appreciate everybody listening. We do appreciate Coach Merriweather coming on. We're going to continue to have great shows. We're going to continue to do, we're going to try to, it's not scheduled out, but it will be, right, Brandon? The crossover show coming on later on this week. You know, even if it's for a half hour, 45 minutes, man, it's kind of like how we see our interaction type of show. We like people, whether it's Justin Powell, Scott Nichols, or Brandon, or Coach Brantley down in Purdue, you know what I'm saying, commenting on what we're talking about. I think when we do that show, Brandon, we'll talk a little bit Bears. Maybe.
Yeah. Get them fired
Maybe
up.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit Bears, man, because we have a heavy viewership, right?
Contingency,
thank you. With that particular franchise, man, I think, you know, a lot of times we don't show the Bears because, you know, there's a lot of Bears fans here in Indianapolis, man. A lot of times, hell, Brandon, I ain't telling you, you know, you'll see people in one weekend rocking Bears gear and the next weekend walking Colts gear. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like some people, it's okay with me. I don't care. I get it because they're an area team too. And it's kind of hard if you're a certain age group not to like the Bears, especially if you're from the 80s. If you grew up in the 80s, man, you know, when Indianapolis didn't have a team, that was kind of Indianapolis's team that they kind of hooked their anchor to. You know what I mean? The Chicago Bears. So, but like I said, I do appreciate everybody listening. We're going to continue to have great shows. And I thank Brandon for his flu game. He came through tonight.
All right, folks, we'll see you guys later on. And like I said, we'll have a crossover show later this week. There'll be a schedule for it, and you can count down the show and join us. And please, as always, interact, enjoy, like, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening.
Crossroads Sports.